All right, so we are live with the Brothers Wisps, cast number 13. Again, we're kind of light on brothers, but we made up for it with a huge personality, probably the biggest one we've ever had on the show, and probably the biggest one that this cast can sustain, I would imagine. So with us, as always, our keeping constant vigil is Justin Wilson up there, freezing his tail off up north.
Yep.
And I'm Greg Soule, down here in Texas with a balmy 71 degrees, wearing our shorts. And then with us is Tom Smith, the Irish madman that everybody knows and loves. Made his first trip to the States here at the U.S. Mum in New Orleans. And hopefully he doesn't think that that's really what the United States is like, because it is not. That it's a world unto its own.
Well, it's a cool city, you know, like I was just saying, you know, the rest of the states have a lot to live up to now, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you want to judge it that way, I'll have to assume that all Irishmen have a lovely operatic voice and capable
well,
of
singing. Well, we all do after a few pints.
But Tom, seriously though, he's a microtech expert, he's an instructor, he's a consultant. He is going to be heading back to the States here in a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, no, I'm coming in February, just doing a training course in Dallas. So if any of you want to go for a few pints around the Texas area, so maybe you, Greg, will you be joining me for a pint or two?
You say around the Texas area, but when you live in Texas, you think of it in time, not distance, like X number of miles. You think of how long does it take me to get from place to place. And so me to Dallas is about 3.5 hour drive, I think, something like that.
Oh, Tom's worth it.
Yeah, I might give it a go. I might give it a go. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I might even meet you halfway, you know, get one of those Greyhound buses or something like that.
Is there anything halfway?
I was about to say there's nothing halfway, short of Tom getting stabbed on a Greyhound. That's going to be your only source of excitement. You don't want to ride a Greyhound. You're too pretty to ride a Greyhound, Tom.
Okay, thank you very much. Even with the beard, like...
Yeah, you do look a little more grizzled, but we like that down here in the South, so you gotta watch yourself.
Well, also,
tell us a little bit about yourself, Tom.
Yes, how you doing, guys? Pleasure, honor to be here, so thanks very much, Greg, for inviting me. When you told me you were going to talk about cats and stuff like that in the film, I'm glad it's not just that, you know. When Greg was introduced me first, he was saying, oh, we do these video hangouts, we talk about cats and stuff, are you interested? And I said, yeah, definitely, I'd definitely do it. So I was very intrigued to hear about this. So also, I suppose for me, I've been using Microtech for the last 6 years. I've been kind of working on networks and computers for about this year 2000, and kind of started my own Wisp in Ireland, very small, in the center of the country, because my best friend, Mike Cotter, he founded a business and he said he couldn't get broadband, so he decided to set up his own Wisp. And because I knew something about computers, I was brought in on it. And it was a steep learning curve, I have to say. That's where I kind of got introduced to the love of my life, Microtech, and the rest is history, I suppose. But no, I kind of like kind of technology, messing around. I like problem solving. So I suppose it's kind of nice when you meet lots of people like yourself, just there in the moments where ideas get shared. In fact, I've had the pleasure of often, just before a class, doing a bit of cramming and often come across GregSoul.com that comes to the rescue. So have to be honest there. Just,
you just keep stroking that ego, buddy. Just keep.
God, there you go. Respect. I know, but seriously, all in all, like, it's nice to meet people who share ideas and share information. So it's a pleasure to be on, and thanks for having me.
Oh yeah, man, we'd love having you. Like I tell everybody at the Mum, that's one of the few places I actually fit in. I'm like a normal guy there, so I really like not only the people, but you know, the information sharing. But it's, you know, it's a good time.
Yeah, no, it is. It's definitely. I'd actually say you're not just normal. I'd say you're cool in that space. So it's kind of one of those rare moments.
I think I'm weird, and I have trouble hiding the weird. I like this is me suppressing the strangeness. This is about as good as it gets right here.
Hey, well, good job.
You got to dole it out little pieces. You know, you can't just let the floodgates of crazy loose right off the bat. You know?
Oh, definitely. Well, it scares people off, you know, particularly if they're going to give you money for consulting, you have to kind of hold it back. In fact, Yannis often said to me at moments, Tom, maybe ease off on the beer. It's not a big party, you know. I'd kind of go, but it's fun. And so
free.
Is this from the same guy who was walking around with like two beers in his hand? Like after the mom?
I'd say his story was that I'm holding it for someone. Hi, Yannis. He'll be watching it later.
Well, how do you find Microtik adoption over there? Is it a something you run across on a halfway regular basis or?
Microtik, I suppose, really came we wrote the curve as being a distributor in Ireland as well. But when we joined or set up as a WISP. We were looking at various different products, and there was some god awful stuff out in the market there. Stuff that was bridged. I won't name the manufacturers just in case I libel someone or something like that. But, silly things like, you know, configurations not being applied when you hit apply, lockups, all this type of stuff. And then I suppose StarOS. Then was a break from the norm. It actually worked. It resembled kind of Red Hat Linux with, you know, when you saw it booting up on the console, okay. And I remember thinking, wow, this was when I was just looking at what platform we'd use for our ISP. And I went, wow, this StarOS really is pretty cool. But then Michael came back from a meeting with my business partner. He came back from a meeting with another ISP. And I said, you've got to look at this Microtik stuff. It's pretty, pretty nice. And of course, we were fairly green, as you can imagine, greenhorns at the time. I loaded it up. It was actually on a StarOS board. You know those wrap boards, the 2C?
Yep.
So it was a small little 32 megs of RAM, 32 meg flash card. So I put Microtik on it, and I was kind of going, interesting command line. And command line completion, I was going, wow, this is amazing. So I was using SSH and the serial console to kind of get to grips with the Microtik. And after about 2 weeks, I discovered Winbox. So you can imagine. So I fell in love with the command line in Microtik because I said there's no way they could make possibly a nice GUI like what Microtik did make. Its adoption rates were peaking, I suppose, before the rise of Ubiquity. It's still very popular here, but I think one of the issues I see with Microtik, and certainly as a person who tried to sell it and trade people out, that Ubiquity was kind of simple. So if you were setting up a network first, and you didn't understand quality of service, you didn't understand dynamic routing, you were kind of going, well, this is a no-brainer, it's kind of like next, 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 and it's almost like your cheap home router, if you know what I mean. Then, and for that, I think Ubiquity got mass appeal, and also the price point was slightly cheaper. Microtik disrupted the market, and then Ubiquity did to Microtik what Microtik did to everyone else in the marketplace. So really, I suppose the way I put it to you is it's probably the most popular product, Microtik, for WISPs in Ireland. Generally, the bigger WISPs would use it in Ireland. The more successful ones, I probably add.
Okay.
There are some guys who use Microtik quite well, and then there's guys who try halfway house where, you know, they may use Microtik as PPPoE concentrators and then have Ubiquity for the client edge access. Yeah. So it's a mix, but generally it would be, I'd say it would be probably 50-50, or sorry, let's say 40% Microtik, 40% Ubiquity, and maybe 20% for the more, luxurious and expensive products.
Cambium and Motorola and those guys.
Exactly. So.
How are you seeing adoption rates like in the enterprise where they're not necessarily doing the WISP environment, just I'm a business and I've got a router.
It's certainly improving. Certainly the most new customers we've been seeing have been guys who genuinely, like, what we found is that the training environment has become more challenging. I think when you're training ISPs, they have a bit more of an understanding. They've kind of rode a very steep curve as it is. While, you know, enterprises, you know, they want a firewall. We're seeing it very, the trend is, you know, using it for quality of service and for as a security appliance, even just for VoIP systems, you know, for port forwarding and stuff like that. So, like, I suppose the true power of MikroTik is that it can turn on a sixpence, as we would say in Ireland. You know, it can really, it's really, I suppose, maneuverable if you, you know, it's so configurable. That's where we're seeing it. But with that high degree of configurability is the high the ease at which people can actually confuse themselves and make mistakes in the configuration.
So yeah, I'm kind of seeing with some of my clients, they're, you know, they're ISPs first, but then they're going out, you know, they may have IT you know, consulting or whatever, and they're going out to their businesses, and instead of installing a, you know, a D-Link or, you know, something like that, they're installing like a 750 or a 951.
Absolutely, yeah, and we're seeing a lot of that. Like, I mean, the 750s are very popular. I think the 2011s have surged in popularity simply because they look pretty good and they're very cost effective. Certainly some of the larger voice carriers in Ireland, or voice over IP carriers in Ireland, are certainly looking at them. You know, they're quite, but also the price point of the fiber CPEs, you know, have made them a very attractive offering for the enterprise. Certainly there's a growth in the enterprise, but I think, and I often say this to MikroTik, I think their interface needs refining for the enterprise user.
And I, you know, to that point, I think that's kind of the direction they're moving with WebFig. You know how you can set up new little profiles. You can have your admin profile, but then you can set up a profile just for the user that's going to be kind of stripped down and some limited information, which I think is great. As much as I like that, I'm a huge fan of Winbox, and I really am scared they're going to depreciate Winbox at some point.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, no, like, it's certainly, I can't, although they still seem to be putting a fair emphasis on it, but yeah, I suppose at some stage, if the trends with tablets continue, like, you know, Intel's quarterly earnings were down, what was it, 20 or 30% on this time last year, and they're saying slower PC sales while tablet sales are surging, so if the market keeps going the way it is, MikroTik may well just follow the money. Which will be a worry, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you also have to keep up with the Joneses, as we would say over here. So, you know, ubiquity's all about the web GUI. So, I mean, we got to kind of, I mean, you'd have to see that shift. You know, you have to see some kind of an answer to it.
Absolutely. Well, and it's certainly, you know, for the tablets or the smartphone devices, it made sense to go with the nice GUI that they have. And it's certainly, you know, it is pretty cool. And they seem to be always improving, which is nice.
Yeah. So to you, you think the number one thing keeping it out of the enterprise is the user interface?
I think, like, the way I'd look at it is, the way I describe it, that I've often had these discussions with.
Aha. I'm trying to get you to tell me something that you don't like about it.
The way I describe it is, they've taken the Linux kernel and drawn a GUI around that, and it's almost programmer-focused. It's based on, you know, these different kernel parameters, and they kind of, you know, put boxes all over the place on it. And if we look at some of the more successful, I suppose, IT systems out there, and I'm not referring to routers per se here, like, I'm looking at Steve Jobs. The thing about the iPhone was, I suppose, I started using the iPhone, and it was brilliant. And I'm not necessarily an Apple fan, but you could see there was a pedantic, if you want, approach to the interface. There was this, what am I going to do? I'm going to make a call. I'm going to put in a few numbers. I'm going to press a button. When I moved to Android, which I use now, and I use it probably because of the more freedom it affords me, as opposed to, you know, what Steve Jobs thought I should do with a phone.
Right.
You know, Android allowed me a little bit more, you know, because, you know, they got the picture that it's a little computer as well. But Android tends to you dial a number, and then you mightn't be connected to the internet. You might only just have a 2G signal, and suddenly you're being asked, do you want to make this call with Skype? And you're like, look, I dialed a number, dude. Just, you know.
Just do it.
Just do it. You know, like, you know, you can see these little annoying kind of, I suppose, flows that, you know, the iPhone had that flow while the Android operating system, it had some annoying interruptions to that. And I'd say a MikroTix interface, you have all the settings you want, but where do you start? I think they're trying to address that with, Quickset, but I think it needs a more fundamental approach. I think it needs to, like, if we look at the OSPF, if we look at the OSPF or the wireless, and they're certainly improving it. Like, I mean, the wireless in 5.22 even, you can actually see where, as you select different things in the first menu, then they're removed from the advanced menus if they're not relevant, which is something we were looking for quite some time. Because, you know, you have a couple of hundred settings there. Some of them are absolutely irrelevant based on, and I think maybe we can move it towards that, but I think more work needs to be done there. Perfection is a moving target, as I often say.
Oh, yeah. And to what you're saying, that totally makes sense, because I see 60, 70-year-old grandmas using iPhones updating Facebook accounts. I don't see them using Androids as much.
No, oh, and the other thing I see is, you know, we kind of partnered on our Zig network with a local computer shop. And we say, okay, our only real supported router for this network is the 750. But the problem is the average customer, even if they got their hands on it, they wouldn't be able to configure it. I mean, it's not like they can, you know, they have this nice printed documentation with it to, you know, log in, and it's all pretty much set up. So, you know, there's a third party setting this up for them. And so that in itself, you know, is kind of hurting the adoption in that market. But it's, you know, I realize that's not MikroTix's focus, but, you know, it's still, you know, a big thing that they could be doing.
And to what you're saying, that seems like that's where the Quickset fits in. It gives you the majority of the functionality right out of the box, you can configure it. To me, there's a saying here that we have is, it's, I know just enough to be dangerous. Right? And so if they know enough to really be dangerous and they navigate outside the menu, I don't feel so bad if they break it themselves. You know, it's
true, yeah.
But like it is, there's also the other side of it. Like if we look at the capabilities of a MikroTix device, it's extremely difficult to make an interface that, like, and I understand this, it's like, you know, like it's easy for me to outside kind of go, oh, I wish this was done better. It's if you look at, let's say, Checkpoint, or if you look at Cisco's ASAs, they're not too easy to configure either, because they're aimed at an enterprise market. And I think in that sense that MikroTix, certainly for the price point, I don't think anything comes close. But
oh no, I'm not knocking them. You know, it's just
I'm not knocking them, but I would be kind of constructively critical, and I think that's what we're like as users and I suppose enthusiasts. You know, we'd like MikroTix to take heed to that. You know, and I think they are, but they need to do more of that.
Oh yeah. There's always more. One of the things I've always said is I wish Ubiquity and MikroTix would create a ceasefire, and they say, okay, nobody's going to make a new product for an entire year. All we're going to do is focus on software, you know? So stop the arms race and then just focus on making the products you have work better. I think that would be, that would only benefit the users. That wouldn't necessarily benefit the manufacturer. So I don't foresee that happening, but one thing you're talking about, the GUI, that I see that they do that nobody else in the industry does, is the GUI exactly follows the command line. So in the GUI, if you go IP address, command line, IP address, IP firewall filter, IP firewall filter. And so like if you're doing it on an ASA, if you're doing it through the GUI, the ASDM, that's actually TAX recommended configuration method. They tell you not to use CLI anymore. It is entirely and wholly different via CLI versus the menu. So I think, to me, I always thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah. I tried and adding
also, go ahead, Tom. Well, sorry for interrupting.
Oh, that's all right. Go ahead.
But even like the ASAs, like the one thing is, it depends on the version you're using. at least Microtik have, you know, the, since 2.9, that I think 17 was the first one I used, the interface commands have been very, very much the same, following the same line. Some subtle modifications, but nothing to write home. I mean, you know, it depends on which version of iOS you're using, the command structure.
Yeah.
Different. Oh, yeah. And so, like in their firewalls, they entirely changed the way NATing works in the version 8 swap. And so it's, you get to re-engineer your entire brain.
Yeah, no, it's, and it's, so like for that reason, and certainly like with the budget we started our wireless ISP, if we chose any other platform than Microtik, we would have gone out of business. I'm fairly, it's one thing I can adamantly say in support of Microtik, that the price point, but also the feature set and the stability. I mean, it, generally for what we were doing, Microtik was rock solid for what we were doing. You know, I suppose more transparency on bugs would be great, but that could probably be said of all. I couldn't go for 5 minutes complimenting Microtik without just a little criticism.
Yeah. As far as criticizing Microtik goes, Tom has the biggest balls I've ever seen on anybody in my entire life, and that's where I'm going to leave it. I'm just going to leave it there. I was witness to something that was wholly amazing, and we'll stop there. But maybe after a few pints in Dallas, he'll retell the story. But I thought it was pretty brilliant.
I'm an enthusiast, like all enthusiasts.
We get emotional sometimes. You're a very passionate person. I like that. I love that about you.
Sometimes.
So, another thing that Tom is known for is security. He's a very security-focused person. As you could tell, he's very technology-oriented, and those guys usually want to try and break everybody else's stuff, a.k.a. security-focused. So I know you've given weren't your last two MUM presentations about security, at least?
Last two or three. I know, like, I like to focus on security because – in some respects, I find that the focus is not necessarily on security in wireless ISP, not wireless ISP, sorry, not like that, but just in general, I think in networking, I think security is a fairly low priority, except in data center, professional data centers like the one that you work for, Greg. You know, like I think there is a focus on it and a requirement to do so. But so many aspects of industry, people just kind of go, security, it's going to cost much. Or, you know, there's a deadline for 5 o'clock Friday evening to get that code released. So it's kind of frustrating for anyone who's a security officer. So I kind of like to focus on it and try and be a counterbalance to the massive, ambivalence towards security that there is globally, you know.
Yeah. I know as far as security goes, I actually I do consulting for a couple of banks, and every time they get a new set of auditors, they always run into the same product. Same problem rather. It's the auditors always say, "What the hell is Microtik? What is this thing?" You know, it's obviously we have no idea what it is, so we can't trust it. You know, and I haven't really seen Microtik trying to address anything like that. Like I think if they would like pursue something like Department of Homeland Security here, you know, some kind of certification.
Yeah.
I think, man, that would blow it up. That would make it so easy to put it in so many different environments.
But absolutely. I think also because they're in Latvia, which is, you know, a NATO country as well, you know, if they went for one of the NATO-type certifications where they open it up. But I think they're incredibly secretive and sensitive about security and in terms of opening up their code for external review. And I suppose if I was sitting on the amount of effort and the amount of man hours or man years of work that have gone into making the Microtik GUI sit with all the other systems in Microtik, it'd be kind of, it's a tough decision to make, but I think it would open many doors for them. Not least, it would actually show that they're actually addressing a lot of fundamental questions that we get asked as IT or security administrators. Like certainly, if you look at, let's say, the NSA at the NSA's Guide for Hard League Red Hat. Fantastic book, booklet there that was produced, obviously, by the NSA while they had the remit. I think it's now gone to the Department of Homeland Security. But it was a fantastic document with threats and countermeasures. Even for Windows operating system, you could actually see methodologies for one attacking, but also mitigating those attacks. And you could see certain things like approach. And in fact, when we were doing our presentation in the moment or New Orleans, like we kind of raised some of those issues that, let's say, that are used to harden Red Hat Linux, let's say, that it could be applied to MakerTik. And to be fair, in version 6, after they have actually released some of those features into version 6. Probably the one that I'm most excited about is the reverse path verification, so which will allow us, and which will allow, obviously, for those in the audience who may not be aware, it's basically where you'll check inbound traffic versus your against your routing table, and then you can assess whether the packet was likely to be spoofed. For instance, if you have a private network, let's say 10.0.0.0/24 on your LAN, and then you have a connected route, obviously, into your LAN. If traffic sourced from 10.0.0/24 comes in from your internet connection, most likely someone's just trying to spoof. And when you look at it, when your router would actually look it up and go, "Well, actually, I have a better route for it back here, so maybe I shouldn't allow this." So I'm actually quite excited about that feature. That was put in release candidate, I think 6 was release candidate 3. I was very happy, so I have to thank Yanis and support for helping my case. And
that's so ironic. RPF, I actually wrote a script to do RPF about a year ago. So it would actually, yeah, it would take your route tables and then compile everything together. The only thing was, like with BGP, if you have, you know, 300,000 routes, the MakerTik can get a little hairy when you're actually trying to do that via scripts and then trying to keep track of everything. So it worked on small route tables that didn't, I mean, they could fluctuate as long as they were relatively small. But once they got too big, yeah, kind of started killing things.
Can you share that script? Because I'm actually fascinated to hear that.
Well, what's the point now, man?
Oh, but it's good. It's your methodology. It's class. That's actually deadly. Like, and there's 2 different modes as well. Well, there's 3 modes. There's off, of course, and then, which is what currently is version 5. But then there's strict, and then there's loose. So strict is where you'll only accept traffic from the best possible route, while the other one, loose, would be kind of where any viable routes that it could have come in would be allowed. So, if, you know, so that's one of the ones that you can, you know, one of the modes. But it's quite cool. There's some other stuff like blocking ICP redirection and stuff like that, just to increase security as well. So I'm actually well pleased with some of the progress that's been made to make MakerTik even more secure than it already is. So very happy with that.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm also working on, I'm going to do for the next MUM, I'm going to do a security-related one that I think you'll probably like. But see, I can't talk about it now, because then you'll go and do it in South Africa or something. You're going to one-up me.
Well, speaking of that, okay, well, you know, the best way to do that now would be to come to the European MUM, but, you know, and then, you know, if for the want of a better word, cock block the cock block, you know. That's not profanity, really. You know, I was referring to poetry there.
You're talking about chickens. It's fine. It's a very healthy industry here. Yeah, I'm not going to be able to make it to the European MUM this year. I made a compromise with my wife. Since we go to the American MUM every year, I'm going to a convention of hers this year, so that's going to be eating up my opportunity to do that. But it's going to be in LA. It's going to be out in California, in Los Angeles, you know, Hollywood. So that's going to be
sacred.
I was like, you know, yeah, I'd give it a go. We'll see what happens.
What about you, Justin? Are you coming to Europe?
Only if someone sponsors me.
Only if someone sponsors you. Okay, yeah. Guys, dial 555. Give him a free trip to Sacred.
Well, I never said if somebody handed me a free plane ticket, I couldn't make something happen, but I seriously doubt that's going to happen.
Once again, 555, give Greg a try.
We'll start a Kickstarter.
Yeah, no, I'm keeping a training course over there beforehand, so should be interesting. So.
Oh, that would be fun.
But I always enjoy the European moms. They're quite big, actually. You know,
the yeah, they're a whole lot bigger than the U.S. moms. You know, they're, what, several thousand-plus people, aren't they?
Yeah, no, you can have, I think, around about 800 is usually, but I think maybe 1,000 last year. It's kind of unusual. Like, if you were comparing the North American market and the European market, while they might be similar in terms of GDP, you know, in themselves, like, in terms of, in Europe, like, you can have, like, you know, 30 or 40 different small little countries and, you know, 1 million, 2 million here, different languages, and consequently, you have at least 40 trainers. You know, you have about 60 or 70 distributors. You know, so it's quite a mix of talent, a mix of cultures, even, you know. While, you know, the North American continent seems to be like, you know, 10 bigger players in terms of the actual distributorship chains. And then you've got your probably, I suppose, your 6 or 7 active traders in the U.S. as well. So it's kind of, there seems to be a lot, I suppose, smaller communities kind of coming together in Europe, you know, that kind of way. It's definitely interesting. I remember going to my first one in 2007 and, I suppose I made a lasting impression on a few people back then, and, trying to keep up appearances then after that, you know.
Yeah, man, that would really be cool to see that many people in one place.
I know it is, and they're talking about Microtik and talking about different networking issues, and then if a competitor of Microtik releases a product the day before, which often happens, we won't mention their names.
No, mention away. This isn't a Microtik only. We talk about everybody here.
So it was an interesting thing.
What the creators of South Park say at one time, we just make fun of everybody.
Oh, absolutely. On the subject of South Park, though, absolutely genius. I don't know what they'd be smoking or eating, but give me a teensy-weensy bit of it. That could be very scary, of course.
I'm a Family Guy person. I like Family Guy.
Come here, you bastard. Okay, no more profanity. Sorry about that, guys. I was paraphrasing Mr. Femiga. He was brilliant in Ted, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think of Ted, Craig?
I wasn't overly impressed. I felt like they took a 30-minute episode of Family Guy and stretched it over 2 hours. So it was like there were too many lulls in there. I needed more jokes. I need more to string the action together quicker. I'm jaded these days. Like, I don't like anything. I'm just that old man who wants to yell at kids to get off his lawn. I mean, that's all I am, dude. That's like the superhero movies. I'm done with that. I don't want anything to do with them. Don't give me that Marvel. Don't give me that Marvel stuff. You're dead to me.
Oh, I'm excited about this year's upcoming movies. I'm pumped.
Which ones are coming up?
Lone Ranger. Of course, I'm a huge G.I. Joe fan. We got Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3, that could be cool.
Yep. I know I'm missing some, but it should be a good year.
Was?
Indeed.
Some film I saw recently that I thought was savage. Come back to me. Sorry.
All right, so one of the things I always like to do on this is when we have guests is have the guests talk about something they screwed up and what they did to fix it. So something embarrassing. We call it the oh crap moment. That moment where you broke something like, oh my God. And you get the cold sweat, you get the instant sweat.
Well, I was installing a BGP router there on Saturday night, and of course, like all good people that prepare well beforehand, blanked a password, nothing prepared, put it into the rack, put all the cables in, it was all kind of neat. Move switches around to make sure it fit in, keeping it live at the time, you know, that you know, hold it. That was grand, of course. Then I logged in, and of course, you know, as Mac Winbox sometimes does, it locks you out halfway through, you know, when you're trying to do something. So let's configure Mac Winbox, and anyway, let's configure the password. And bear in mind, I was 100 miles away from my office. It was 2 o'clock Saturday morning, and suddenly there was the old crap moment. It was like, I can't get back into the fucking router. it was like, oh my God, I'm going to shoot myself if I can't get back in. But luckily enough, it was just, I normally rename the admin account, and of course, the admin account just was admin. So, but that's wild, actually. I've done an awful lot worse, I suppose. We've all done worse.
We just don't talk about that. We're still working for those companies. And
okay, the worst thing we've ever done, I suppose, was my own wireless ISP. So ISPs out there, or the brothers of wireless ISPs out there, definitely just learn from my mistake. I had a load of at an environmentally friendly site. Well, or okay, I was going to spoil a beautiful scenic site, so I had to keep everything nice and compact. So, of course, we started off with 3 sectors, and of course, because we were using good quality Microtik gear, good quality antennas, good quality cards, of course, we started to grow. Then I was like, we're getting too many people on our sectors, so we said, let's put more sectors out, then we can kind of spread the load across more sectors and get more clients and more revenue and happy days. They'd be lower latency and all that. And that was a great idea, you know. So we kind of arrive up on site. We put 3 more sectors in. Only thing was, this the speed completely sucked. And so it completely sucked for about 3 months. And the guys who were installing were complaining. Of course, I was in my Eiffel Tower, 100 miles away from this particular site thing. Everything is perfectly conceived. Stop annoying me. It's perfect. Go away. Until one day I was told to start monitoring pings to a particular client who was important, and I could see pings of, let's just say, the 3 digits of milliseconds, and I wasn't too happy about that. So after about 2 days, anyway, doing spectral scans at 2 a.m, because I had to wait till everyone had gone to bed, even though I realized that all the poker players that play professionally on our network aren't happy about the timing we do our maintenance at. So, well, you can't win them all. And then I realized that the whole 5 gigahertz band was red in my spectral scan. The whole lot. I mean, like 4.9 to 6.1 red. And I was going, oh, Jesus, maybe new competitors moved into our area. They're totally screwing us. And then I kind of was going, oh, gee, but where is it? So I did it. Anyway, I went to the drastic thing. I turned off everything on our site. And then doing another spectral scan, I'm going, it's gone. And then I realized that because I have my antennas like literally this far apart, dumbass, I know, but I could at least see. When we did a spectral scan, what we actually noticed is that if you were right beside the antennas, facing roughly the same direction or just slightly off, that if you're using a 20 megahertz channel bandwidth, you'll actually go down to minus 40. If you're using that channel, if you go 20, you're expecting that to be only used at 20 megahertz. But what actually was happening was because they were so close, the cards were so powerful, the antennas were so good, what we were actually seeing was that the other antennas beside were actually picking it up at minus 40 for about 80 to 100 megahertz of bandwidth. So you couldn't actually use any channel with it. You put 8 sectors in a site, and then suddenly you're kind of going, there's all of it. So we actually ended up having to rebuild the whole site. I mean, you're talking about going up to landowner and saying, please, I know it's a very sensitive site, but look, we need to triple the height of our structural mass. We need to then separate it, put as much separation. And we found that, you know, roughly separating them about 1 meter vertically and about, you know, 2 feet. So 3 feet vertically, 2 feet for the guys, you know, in the US. They, you know, 2 feet from each side, that we actually then started to get some serious performance improvement. And obviously our spectral scans looked a little bit more respectable. But certainly for guys who have nothing to do, get two sectors, put them on a bench, put a card into one, then put the other into spectral scan mode, and you'll actually be amazed at how just the separation, you'll actually see the effects that you won't just see 20 megahertz channel. You'll see about 100 megahertz, just because it's kind of like a bell curve. And when you're that close, that it's just a massive, that for every centimeter you move away, it was a massive improvement.
Well, and you know, most antennas we deal with are not a full wave antenna, so they're, you know, they're a quarter wave, half wave, you know, three quarter wave. They're not a full, you know, wave. Otherwise, they'd be this huge antenna. So, you know, once you get that resonant frequency, if you got something right next to it, it's just gonna, you know, it's just gonna pick up on it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, now they was it that RF armor stuff you could slap on the back of your radios, it's supposed to, and then now the Ubiquiti makes the titanium sectors.
Titaniums, yeah.
That are supposed to have a lot better frequency cancellation on the back and all that stuff.
Yeah, like, I'm always a bit worried about those RF armors because of reflections, you know, that if they're anyway engineered aspects that, you know, the reflections back in. Have you ever come across that, or have you come across where sometimes shielding causes problems with reflections themselves, or
90% of what I've heard has been positive. I've heard a couple of people that just didn't install them right that had problems. But how about you, Justin?
Yeah, we've deployed some, and I've seen, you know, the good example. We've deployed some in a downtown area. The noise floor without was like neg 87, something like that. With the RF armor, it was in the 90s. Yeah, my main complaint about the RF Armor brand is it's a pain to get to the radio if you ever have to replace the radio, because it's sandwiched against the tower, and you have to undo this little box on the back, and you basically have to loosen the sector to get it away from the tower to get this box out. So
then, of course, then you're trying to realign it or reposition it.
Yeah. Like,
interesting. I'm gonna patent a spray paint that's got like metal flakes in it and just hose down the back of your. I said it here first.
Editors.
you know, it'll be like hubcap chrome spray. That's how you just wrap the back.
No, like, absolutely. Well, like, I mean, we were even thinking that, you know, we were looking at all. Or if we could get that stuff that they put on, you know, the B2
the stealth bombers.
Black ball paint.
So I think that could be useful. So any guys who work for Northrop Grumman, can you give us a call?
Yeah,
send 555.
Send us some gallons.
Yeah, just send us a review sample.
Your secret's safe with us.
Yeah, to random guy in Ireland, go for it.
Well, I tell you, we won't be deploying this on stealth technology, you know? Particularly if I'm driving, like, you'll hear me coming a mile away, you know?
Oh, is that right? Because you're going to have your head out the window screaming while you're coming.
Oh, hello, guys! No, certainly, but like, even like for us, that was one of the biggest mistakes I made as an ISP, and that. It was god awful. Like, we were starting at around 4 o'clock in the morning. No tea breaks. And any of you, believe it or not, it's not beer in this, it's actually a cup of tea. But like, I like my tea breaks, but literally we'd start at 4 in the morning, work right through till 8. So we had to take down two or three sectors, have them point in the exact same direction, exact same tip and tilt on it. Oh, it was a nightmare. But we got it done eventually after a week. Just doing one section of the mast at a time. But yeah, that was the oh god damn it moment, or oh darn, or oh gosh, what was the moment you was said?
The oh crap.
Oh crap,
it's,
yeah.
It's definitely. Usually another four letter word, but we try to make that one. Let's bring it back around. So we just entered the new year. So what's your favorite gadget, or your favorite piece of tech from 2013? What do you got?
Well, I'm kind of a little bit behind the times, probably, but
it can be anything.
Yeah, my wife got me a Kindle, and we use that quite a bit. I'm kind of resistant to ebooks because I can't mark them. I can't, you know, I can't flip pages easily. But if it's a book that I just sit down and read from cover to cover, and I don't flip around and stuff like that, I'm cool with it. So my Kindle's it's almost always, you know, somewhere with me.
There's some deadly ebooks you can get for them. And what I we were watching them. I actually like the ebooks for the simple reason that, you know, you might have a bit of a job on for security, and there's a great book by Chris McNabb, Network Security or Network Vulnerability Assessment. Fantastic book. But what I found was it was always, you know, you never have time to fully read it. But what you do is you're waiting for someone for dinner or something like that. Pick out your iPhone or your Android, and you just start flicking through with the Kindle. And you read about 10 minutes, and then the person comes and you go, hey, I'm just reading. And, you know, you're not bringing a library like a big nerd around. So if you want to be a closet nerd, it's the perfect. But certainly there's some books, and on my LinkedIn page, I actually have done a review of some of the books, which I have to say, because of Kindle and that type of ebook software, now I don't actually have a Kindle myself. It's more the actual... just the software on the phone. I have to say, I've started reading a lot more books. And I suppose finding the time, you know, that little precious 10 minutes during the day, you know, in the bath. I'm not going to put an image of me naked there or anything like that. You know, big hairy chest, flicking a book in the bath, maybe sipping a beer if I haven't drank it all from the fridge already. But yeah, that was pretty nice. What's your favorite tech piece, Greg?
I don't know. Probably. I don't know. I don't really have much personal stuff. I keep it pretty bare bones, man. The only thing I ever really use that's tech is I use my laptop, and I use my my Android phone. That's about it. I think I think the most anticipated piece of tech was the Cloud Core, I think, for a lot of people. But honestly, I don't have anything that could push it, so that's kind of depressing as far as that goes. The M5 stuff from Ubiquiti, I was kind of looking forward to that, and I've been playing around with that a lot. And it's pretty neat. There's still some additions they need, some big additions to it, but I think it's got potential.
Yeah, the Cloud Core is kind of like a diamond, you know. The only thing that'll push a Cloud Core is another Cloud Core.
that's a good way to look at it.
I know. Somebody offered to let me review one, and I was like, I don't even have anything to push it with. Well, I can give you another one, and you could do it between. I was like, I don't know. No, it's okay.
What, you have a big data center. Could you not, like, get a couple of HPs or Dells? Wire them up, bit of IP perf.
I could, but that would be boring. It wouldn't be doing anything. Yeah. Like it would just max out at a gig. Just
what you could do is put a layer 7 pack of filtering rules, and then,
I would just try and kill it. See what I could do to kill it.
Well, I haven't said that. Like, I mean, you know, 36 cores. I'm actually looking forward to it. I wonder when they'll bring out the 64 or the 100 core variants of them. If they will.
I know. Well, I mean, I think it's going to take so long before anybody's able to actually push this thing.
Plus, I would like to see in a Cloud Core, I'd like to see more ports before they did anything.
Really?
Yeah, I could see it. You know, I got a big Cisco 4506 chassis sitting in a data center. It's, you know, it's what, 12U?
Very cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I bought it off eBay. I mean, but...
What? Okay.
See, I was going to say, our gray market over here, buddy, is a lot bigger than
yeah,
yours.
Our
market's huge.
But if I could replace that with a 2U Cloud Core with, you know, 16 SFP slots and some copper, you know, why do I need that big old chassis?
Yeah, no, well, absolutely. And the power, like, I mean, the power usage of them... Like, they're going to give the x86-based systems a serious run for the money, you know, in terms of what they can do per watt, like, you know, how many bits per watt they can move, how many packets per watt. Certainly, I think the Cloud Core is just going to be king in that area for quite some time. I think the Hot Lava type stuff, you know, those cards from Hot Lava systems will be, with the 10 gig. That'll be interesting. But then again, very hard to, you know, push that or, you know, challenge that or test that stuff fully, you know.
I see the CCRs as the death of the x86 box. To me, it's getting to be, what's the point?
It can be, but the other situation is in low latency networks where, you know, like obviously the likes of DDR3 and so on, the advantages that that would offer over the cloud core, you know, might the actual latency, if you're talking, you know, microseconds and stuff like that. I was talking to some guy, Don is his name? Or?
Don, yeah, I know you're Don.
He's all into his low latency, like micro low latency.
Yeah, that guy's hardcore.
Yeah, like it's kind of like he goes, "What do you do with this?" And I'm like, "We do this a lot smaller." But like he only goes 10 gig just for the latency alone. It's just to keep, you know, which is interesting, you know, an interesting approach. So just to keep the latency as low as possible for high frequency trading, you know, which is interesting. So I think the x86 have a different role than the cloud core. It's kind of horses for courses, if you know what I mean. So it's, you know, you've got your off-road racing vehicles, and then you've got your Formula One jobbies. Which one is which? Well, it remains to see. According to the Cloud Core ad, where you're kind of going through a wilderness, certainly the Cloud Core is going to be the off-road. But no, I'd have to say that the Cloud Core, like, it certainly would be very interesting. And obviously, the research that they've been doing with the multi-core x86 and cloud core, and vice versa, hopefully, as well.
My whole thing with the cloud core is MikroTik has been very vocal about not really just, you know, saying we're not going to support x86. The whole culture seems to be x86 is just going to be pushed to the backside. You know, yeah, we'll do stuff with it, but, you know, here's our focus.
It could well be that, but if as more luxurious and as advances get made in x86 technology, I think it would be foolish of them. And fair enough, we do have our own x86 platform ourselves, but I am biased when I say this. But if we look at it from a point of view that the billions of dollars the likes of Intel, Dell, HP and all that invest in the x86 architecture, it will be, I think, folly for a company and, you know, with the budget that MikroTik have to ignore that platform and the advances in that platform. Particularly, you know, like if we think about it, the only things that operate in the 10 gig space for MikroTik at the moment are x86 based systems using the likes of Hot Lava systems, Hot Lava cards. And in that case, I think I'd be confident that as the developments in x86 go, I think so will MikroTik have to support it. I was disappointed, I suppose, in version 6 that they didn't support x86 64, particularly for encryption stuff. On another note, they're going to be announcing, I was in contact with support, Winbox will have kind of similar, either SSL or SSH-based encryption support, so you'll have like signatures, you know, like the way you would have with SSH clients or with VMware clients.
You'll exchange almost like a key, and you know, the traffic is encrypted.
Exactly, and you'll also have that way of hopefully client identification. So they said they're looking at that, and it's not just for Winbox. They'll probably look at it for the API. So I'm kind of looking forward to that, being honest.
Yeah, that's cool.
When it happens, you know. I would have liked to see an x86 64, the platform for the SSL encryption.
About the x86 stuff, though, I don't think MikroTik makes much money off the x86. I think their bread and butter is the hardware, so I think that's where they're going to focus, right? That's what I'm assuming.
Yeah. I would absolutely 120% agree with you, Greg. It's been an issue that I've raised with MikroTik that they should have a level 8 license, okay? Now, this is the picture I draw for MikroTik when I'm having these repeated conversations with them. I've said it once, I've said it 20 times, and now I'm probably just the annoying guy from Ireland who's opinionated, and if they don't agree with me once, I'll just keep repeating it, you know? But one of the key things is if you buy a server, you spend 20, 30 grand on it, you spend thousands of euros on, you know, multi-port cards like the Hot Lava systems or ones, and then you spend $250 on a license for MicroTik, which allows you to upgrade to two more revisions after that. So that's roughly the bones of 3 to 5 years of upgrades free. But you're after spending 60,000 and you're terminating maybe 10,000 PPPoE sessions with it. So what's the revenue? Let's say we're only charging $10 a month or $20 a month. That's a huge amount of revenue you're generating off the back of MicroTik. And of course, if there's a mistake or if there's a bug in a kernel, not of MicroTik's making, and the people want support pronto, that is an issue. That I think if people want to run systems like that, that there should be a level 8 license where MicroTik can go, you know what? This guy has given us some serious wedge. We're happy to help. You know, that kind of
thing.
Right,
right.
I certainly would be an advocate of that. I think that people who want to deploy on x86 systems with that level of volume of traffic flowing through are more than willing to pay for support. Now, you know, obviously people say they were willing to pay for support and then they ignore it. But, you know, thankfully, if you've got a couple of good players paying for support, everyone else who's, you know, getting a level 6 license benefits from the stability improvements.
And, you know, another thing to that is I've actually, I've worked with, I mean, just like you, I've worked with a ton of different organizations and in all different areas of business. And a couple of them actually, at least two of them, have a policy that if they purchase a piece of equipment, they have to purchase support for that equipment. Otherwise, they won't buy it. And I could not get around that with MicroTik. They're like, yeah, it looks like a solid product in this niche environment. It would be perfect, but our company policy is buy product, buy support, and we can't do that.
So could Greg Sowell Consulting, you know, package up some support? And
it has to come from the manufacturer. They have to be able to, like, you know what I mean? They have to be able to have support into, hey, this is a bug in the system. We need a fix for it. And I can't. Now,
to be fair, I found MicroTik on many occasions where, you know, I had flown to sites in Spain where we had x86 systems in a vulnerable situation where, you know, PPPoE sessions weren't exactly working that well on it. And in fairness to MicroTik, we were actually exchanging support for risk, and they did assist and they got the fix. But it what you need is that kind of consistency all the time. You know, you're only as good as your last support ticket, I suppose. And I'd certainly like to see MicroTik have in a way that they feel that they're being remunerated for the software. I just think it's crazy that Dell, HP, all these other lads get the piece of the action, and 250 quid for MicroTik for a core piece of infrastructure for 3 years. I mean, it's not possible to create a support network based on that type of pricing, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know so many people that will pay for support, you know, and then do it. You got a support contract and you have a problem, that's great. If you get a problem, then you want a support contract, it's a higher entry rate, and, you know, we'll fix your problem and then we'll move on past there. You know, I think they would do pretty well, you know, making some extra cash. I know, especially when the economic downturn hit here, that's what Cisco did. They retooled and they started selling the crap out of licenses and the crap out of support, you know, and then opened up all these horizontal markets that they can do without actually having to, like, develop products, just adding additional licensing and support to it. I would be perfectly happy seeing something like that too.
Well, yeah, no, and absolutely. And Microsoft have done the same thing as well, you know, with their licensing models. They've totally re-engineered them, pushing people toward the cloud. I think services are definitely where it's at, and I'd hope that MicroTik actually announce. And I think maybe the cloud core, the likes of those higher-end systems, because they are now getting into higher-end systems, that they will probably entice MicroTik, that they'll see a barrier, that not having support will be a barrier to progress. And hopefully they'll actually push that even more, you know.
With this cloud core, I'm also hoping to see, like, a snap-in for, like, an IPS, like a Suricata sort of thing, or, you know what, maybe partner with, like, a Trend Micro kind of thing. Do that, you know, inline threat mitigation virus scanning stuff. Do whatever.
Yeah, well, with 36 cores, you could do an awful lot of damage, you know, threats. You know, I certainly like to see it. I think definitely they need some SSL offload. I think if they're talking about the cloud core, they really need to be talking, you know, and they're talking about fronting cloud-based systems. SSL, I think, is one, you know, I'd like to see something like S-Tunnel. They're saying there's a problem with the license, so hopefully they maybe do use some other toolkit to actually provide some SSL offload. I think that would be really, 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 for the want of a better word, sexy, you know, to get that done, you know.
I know there's some horizontal stuff they could do too, like load balancing. They did some, you know, say that's a license feature. You buy a certain license and they have, you know, because F5, I mean, they're the beast, but then Barracuda moved in and they have a load balancer and it's obviously doesn't have the bells and whistles, but people are buying them left and right, you know.
But why couldn't like Smoothwall or Sonicwall, you know, yeah, I've seen them and they're actually, the load balancing systems are pretty good, have a fraction of the capability of Microtik. Certainly, I'd like to see some sort of load balancing, with the connection state. I think if they could have that kind of stateful clustering, that would be absolutely savage.
All of the component pieces are there. There's already Linux package called Balance that's a simplified version of that they could. I mean, they could build on top of that. Yeah, there's a lot out there.
Cool. Balance, is it easy to configure? Does it actually do session-based balancing, or is it more like can it actually, you know, let's say if I have a session with Justin there, and then I fail over to your router, will you keep the session going, or how does that work?
It's kind of a simplified program. You basically put in your downstream hosts, and you know it'll do keep alive to make sure they're still. If one of them happens to fall out of the group, it'll just, you know, say round robin to the other guys, or vice versa.
That's kind of cool.
Stuff like that. But, I mean, Microtik could just do a connection count, you know, to all the hosts and balance kind of based on that. If the host goes down, whatever.
But I think certainly, like, in the security space, things like, you know, even just using BGP-based security, like, if we could kind of get information from other honeypots around the world, I was talking with a large voice provider in Ireland, and they were saying how they protect their clients is, you know, they have to constantly have honeypots to identify, you know, these SIP scanners, identify the method of attack, see is there a new zero-day, you know, attacking, you know, telephone systems like Samsung. You know, they would actually, they kind of go, and they'd actually contact then the likes of Samsung or Panasonic and say, guys, you have a problem here, you need to deal with it, and they'd be actively mitigating that. So there's some interesting stuff in that space that Microtik could kind of, you know, with subscription-based services. I suppose the lack of an API where you can actually get down and dirty or an SDK with Microtik probably is an impediment. Certainly for the skins, it'd be nice to see a license feature for that, you know, to actually allow you actually license some proprietary skin. You know, if you make a nice kind of flowing GUI that you can actually protect it. Like, because one of the issues we have in Europe is actually a lot of very, very low cost distributors because in some labor, there's actually, I'm not too sure what it's like in the States, but in Europe you have a disparity between development of various different countries. So like in Western Europe, let's say, so basically historically the Iron Curtain, let's say, so you'd have Western Europe having higher wages, you know, obviously more wealthy, and then in the you'd have then lower cost operations than you know in the former Eastern blocs, and for that can create problems for Western distributors like ourselves. It's a reality of globalization. It's a reality of economic migration. The Irish benefited from it for years. And now, obviously, because we're more wealthy than we have been in the recent past, that obviously now we're suffering the effects of economic migration. Similar, I suppose, to the way U.S. is suffering an economic migration to the likes of China and lower-cost economies globally. And certainly, it would be nice to see some sort of way that in Microtik enthusiasts could actually protect their innovations in the same way that Microtik protect their innovation with the license keying systems. So it'd be kind of cool to see something like that come in. But, you know, I think that would be, would obviously add value to the Microtik brand.
Do you think Microtik needs to start an app store?
It needs to, but we'd have to see how we'd have to see the revenue models. But absolutely, I think the app stores seem to be the way to go. But I've seen some app stores done hideously bad. I think the Clark Connect, they were doing very well there. Version 5, version 6, they took out a lot of functionality. You know, there has to be that blend, you know, a happy place. Like, you know, if you look at an Android phone that you get, it has all the essential ingredients you want, and then you can get all the additional add-ons. So, yeah, no, it'd be nice to see an app store for MikroTik, but I think it would need MikroTik to open up a bit more, with all the risks to MikroTik that entails, in fairness. But like,
I was talking about protection of MikroTik. I think I can't remember who was talking about it, but they said something like after they release a new version, within a few hours, China's got a cracked version of that up on the web, and pretty much anybody can just grab it.
Yeah, no, like apparently, I think that was part of the reason why they went with these new codes back in, what was it, in version 3.25 to 4.0. Remember when you had the 7 digit license keys?
Oh, yeah, got a little bit more complex.
But like, it's one of those things, like, I suppose you can never fight against those guys, but it's more that if someone has a cracked version of your GUI, you can kind of, you know, like, I think the risk, what would prevent me from investing my time and effort in it is, why would I create a web skin that someone in a lower cost economy can copy and stamp it out like cheap plastic toys? Yeah. That's the problem. And, you know, that for me, why would I spend time on that when it's difficult to develop a market and that it can be undercut so easily? Well, if you had a license key, you can kind of go, look, you can buy the routers wherever you want. I don't mind. You want her GUI, you pay us the fee. That's what I would like, ideally. But I won't be raising my finger or hand to do it unless we have some sort of system like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and also what kind of the virtualized nature of the cloud core, who's to say you couldn't put some kind of a system together that would run virtualized on there as well? You know, that could be a package that you would load additionally, something like that, you know?
Well, that's one thing about the cloud core, because obviously 64-bit, that makes massive, it actually makes virtualization on the MikroTik cloud core viable. I mean, if you had an x86 box, you'd be mad to use MikroTik as a virtualization platform with a limit of 2 gigs. You know, you'd be kind of going, okay, VMware, you know, or, you know, Xen, or, you know, VirtualBox, you know, you'd use one of those platforms and then put MikroTik on it. While at least with Cloud Core, yeah, as you're saying, you can, you know, have whatever amount of RAM you want in it, and you can virtualize and do so many things with it. I'm not too sure. Is there many platforms that support, like, as in independent operating systems that support Telera at the moment, or is it kind of very embryonic at the moment?
I know they supposedly, I've seen some stats of different Linux platforms running on the Telera, you know, so that they can get their stats up and all that stuff. So certainly there's various Linux distributions that are actually up and running it, so I'm not sure. I know Suricata was one of the kind of the initial partners with Telera, and they put up some ridiculous numbers moving through their processor doing intrusion prevention.
Well, intrusion prevention, I think that there's some definitely space open there for services and in terms of a distributed environment, you know, if you had like some guys like yourselves and ourselves running boxes and actually sharing, exchanging attack information or intelligence information, you know, particularly like you're saying about the likes of, you know, let's say Chinese underworld characters, you know, cracking MikroTik, you know, they're cracking that with the help of a distributed botnet. Apparently there's this Chinese GhostNet, 100 million machines in it. You know, that's a hell of a lot of computing power. Wouldn't like to mess them. Hello, people out there, don't hurt it. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it is kind of scary, like, when you think of it. And effectively, these type of botnets, I think, have a huge technological advantage. One, they don't have to pay for the resources. And two, they're kind of controlled. You know, they're actually gathering intelligence, distributing intelligence to 100 million machines worldwide. Why isn't there more of a consensus or an approach to get like-minded people and like-minded systems, even from competitors, and exchange more information about attack vectors on the internet? I think that's hopefully an issue that will be addressed in a collaborative manner between competitors. You know, certainly I'd be open to working with other people on it. In fairness, now the antivirus guys tend to share a bit more, but I think more needs to be done in terms of intelligence gathering, honeypot information exchange and stuff, and so on, you know.
Well, I know doing the collection on that, I mean, you're getting so much information at one time. You know, say if you had 100 sites trying to dump all that back to such a repository, that's going to consume resources, bandwidth, all that stuff. So maybe that's why people are a little bit more hesitant to share that kind of stuff.
True, but if you could categorize it, you know, it's you know yourself, like, it's not like, you're right, you know, if you're taking raw intel back, you know, there's no point, I think. But if you could actually categorize, like, simple things, oh, this is an SSH bot, you know, he's just trying to crack your systems, this is an active port scan and vulnerability assessment, or a vulnerability, you know, they're trying to attempt to exploit vulnerabilities. These are type of, you know, if you can get that type of pattern out there, you can kind of quickly, I think, increase the safety of the internet for people on an opt-in basis would be quite good, I think. You know?
Yeah, I've heard of, who is it? It's not going to come to me. They're, I think, an Israeli company. No, not Tipping Point. It's not going to come to me anyway, but they do that with all of their systems. You know, it's like an encrypted tunnel that as soon as they identify a threat, they send it back to the home office, and, you know, and then every so often they actually flood out updates to their boxes, you know, so it's within their own little ecosystem they share and kind of do all that great stuff. But then again, they don't share with any other manufacturer or any other organization.
Yeah,
and if they could, they would just make the whole that much stronger.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, it'll be just an arms race, and then they'll work out a way of getting around that. But certainly, I think at the moment, we can well and truly say that botnets have the edge over us mere mortals, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I was reading about, there's some Russian website you can go to, and for $5 a day, you can basically type in somebody's IP address, and it'll DOS them via their botnet. You know, so it's how do you as just Joe Schmo owning a small ISP protect yourself, you know?
Yeah, I think Mr. Black Hole, you know, but even at that, like a distributed one, what are you going to do, black hole half of?
Well, and it boils down to you're dependent on your provider, because, you know, even if you can, you know, black hole it, you know, it's got to stop
upstream,
above your network. Yeah, it can't come across your transport, because
that's what my mom conversation is going to be about.
Oh, very good.
I'll chicken block you now.
I was actually going to talk about that genuinely. What I'll do is I'll put a big out and I'll say, Greg is going to do a way better version.
No, I've got a script put together. I'm going to put that up with some stuff on a post here soon anyway.
No, that's pretty cool. If you like Cogent or whatever, you know, you can advertise upstream to them and they'll deal with it for you. And I think it's about using their, leveraging the infrastructure of your upstream provider. I think that's certainly an interesting topic. What I might do is plug you in the mum rather than actually take credit for it.
triggered black holes. So yeah, whenever you see a DOS attack or something like that, you basically advertise via BGP backup to your provider with a community string, and then they black hole it there.
Yeah, no, that's cool. A1. No, that is, and it's a thing that people need to know more about. And it would be interesting is if there was a, but it's so dangerous. Like, can you imagine a subscription service where you could actually have ISP subscribe to it, and then if you had a particular piece of software on your router, you could advertise that, oh, this person's DOSing me. But then, you know, the abuse of that is like, yeah, 8.8.8, it's fucking killing me here. Suddenly Google DNS to come.
Yeah, Google's entire air and address range is just totally hammered, man. Let me go and check it out.
Well, like, excuse my language there. Sorry, audience. Yeah.
No. I mean, and honestly, people would be okay with that as long as they could get to their pornography.
Fine. Well, host files, you know, it's the best way to get around to DNS-based. So, kids, don't do drugs. But host files, you know, playboy.com is whatever IP address. So, we shouldn't be advertising that. You can cut that one.
Yeah. We'll plug Tom's porn site here in just a second. It'll be good. A little extra revenue.
Well, you see, it's after 9 o'clock in your time, so it's okay. We're able to talk to an adult audience. So,
See, that's the danger when you're talking to Tom, is that you start out on topic and you're talking about things, and then you just start. It's been an hour and a half. We've already been talking. And we usually are stretched to get 45 minutes out of these things. We run out of material too fast, see? So you're like you've got the gift of gab, Tom. You can just keep this going.
Yep. Yeah, people would say it's maybe talking it rhymes with gab and it begins with C. I talk anyway. No, I think it's an interesting topic. I mean, like, you can talk about security and cloud core routers and MikroTik and how MikroTik can improve and how much you like MikroTik all day long, and they're still going to be annoyed at me over this, but it is. It's really interesting.
So since we've talked so much about MikroTik, have you seen the new EdgeMax, the new Ubiquiti routers? Have you seen those yet?
I've never seen them.
Never seen them. They're like little 3-port guys, and I think they're advertising 1 million packets per second on there.
Is that like bridged with, you know, with the wind behind you and going downhill?
that's routed with large packets.
Is it?
Yeah. And it's based on Viada, so.
Viada, yeah.
Yeah, Viada. Yeah.
So it's running pretty clean, and they're GUI. Is very Ubiquiti like, but it's still trimmed down right now. I mean, there's not a whole lot of functionality in there yet. You could do the basic stuff. You could put IP addresses, static routes. You could do OSPF via the GUI. Not all of the features are there, though. Yeah. You've got their firewalling. And since it's Viada, you've got standard ACLs, or you can do kind of a zone-based firewall. I think they have a PPTP package in there now. Yeah. I think it's out in the wild, so.
No, I haven't come across it for clients, but then again, my clients will probably know what, you know, where my loyalties are or where I, like, you know.
Well, and it's not a shipping product either, so.
Yeah, it's, I think the other issue with, I suppose, I actually love the ad. The only thing is the mistake that they made was rather than have your man, the ninja guy, go in and, you know, drop in the router, send that blonde in. And she goes, oh, I just have to install this. And I'd be like, yeah, okay. Do you want me to help you put the router in, you know?
I know, right? They made it way more difficult. They should have just hired, because the ninjas are so expensive these days. You know, it's just a regular guy. Just have the guy distract him.
Yeah, and tight, and, you know, or her, you know, get a... I was going to say something else, but see that's a rare moment there.
There you go. You held it together.
Well, what I was going to say was, you know, they could have got a hooker and they don't do it, but that one. Sorry, just couldn't resist. But
good time.
I'm not. By the way, I'm not saying that lady in the ad was.
well, I don't know how many.
Tell her something.
How many women do you actually see in IT, though? That's what I want to know. that's what made the whole thing unrealistic for me. The ninja I could buy. It was the woman in IT that's what broke the illusion for me.
Straight off the catwalk into the nerdy computer room, or in the van even. roughing it out in the van.
Oh yeah.
It's rare. But I remember, like, I did engineering in college, and I remember in the open day, I think it was a staged setup, right? I mean, I was sitting in a room. It was a small room. There was about 16 people in the room. I was the only guy apart from the lecturer, and I went, oh, sweet. I was sold to the course. Whatever they were going to say about what third level degree they were offering. Okay. 15 or 14 girls with me, happy days. This is the one for me. And I was just imagining that I was going to be the only guy in class and, you know, have the pick. Yeah, well, that didn't really work out. What actually happened was there was about 56 guys and 8 women, you know. And, you know, not enough models. There was a few nice ladies in there, so at least I can say that. So if any of my former classmates are watching, you could be that model, or you, one or a few models that were there. But no, there was a few cuties in IT, you know, one or two, you know.
See, we don't have any women now, but the place I used to work, we had our token employee, so we had our token woman, and. We had a minority of every race, so it's just keeping it political. So they're very careful about those sorts of things.
Well, that's the good thing about minorities is they're in the minority.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, so
like otherwise, we'd be the minority. Yeah, no, it's kind of hard one to explain that to the equality officers if they ever. Inspect your company.
Yeah, we have a lot of weird laws over here, like as far as minorities go. It's like, we're still apologizing for taking everything from the Native Americans. So we have.
Yeah, well, it was fairly rough. What's up with the stuff? But
they have their casinos. What more do they want? I don't understand.
Casinos, yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Let the hate mail begin.
Yeah, I know. I'm just. These are jokes. These are jokes, people. These are jokes.
Yeah. Well, Wasn't Elvis half Indian, wasn't he? He was, wasn't he? Yeah, I think his mother or something was Native American or something. Yeah.
For some reason, all my friends are minorities. Well, I consider you a minority.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, technically, no matter where you go, you know, you are a minority, really, you know. Yeah, particularly if you're a nerd in IT, you know, we're up against it. Like, could you say in school, oh, we're going to do PGP and nerding out? Admittedly, I didn't know what PGP was when I was in school.
Yeah, I didn't either.
And to a certain extent, I still don't. I know, I do.
Nobody that we ever do work for watches these things. You don't have to worry about it.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I find it fascinating. Like, isn't it amazing, like, how so many different competitors, so many different independent entities can use a protocol like BGP to develop something that is truly global? Like, that is a miracle in itself.
It's pretty amazing.
But I have to say one thing. Wright do an infinitely better job than Aaron. If you see the website, they're told, like, if you're searching for someone's website IP, do you use Ripe or do you use Aaron?
I use Aaron.
Oh, lads, seriously, get along. You're going low. You'll really, really like Ripe. So, and I'm saying this because I was trying to use Aaron's site one day, and I was like, this is quite, you know. Sorry, Mr. Aaron, those people out there. I'd be happy to give you a talk. If you could sponsor a flight over, it would say how Ripe are doing it better. But if you look at the Ripe website, Ripe.net, do not go to Ripe.org. Whatever you do, do not type Ripe.org. It's Ripe.net. And the reason for it is it's an elderly porn site. And imagine going on a customer site. I'm actually serious because I was going, Ripe, well, they're a non-profit organization. Okay. That's not what I meant. Like, you know, you're sitting in front of a client and you're typing this. Yeah, this is a great website. And then suddenly you see some.
You should go here all the time.
Yeah, no, exactly. For all the information that you might need. And it's actually scary. But it's a very unfortunate, I suppose.
And when this goes live, how I'm betting there's 15 people going to the site right now.
No, you but know you want to. And look, it was a genuine mistake. I mean, like, I'm not an angel by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly, you know, I'm not dumb enough to go typing it in front of a client and then trying to explain that's not the website I was looking for. You know, but Ripe.net, fantastic site, I have to say. You know, just in terms of the database lookups, they also allow looking up of other databases like Aaron's, you know, so I found it quite a good resource as well. What are your Aaron membership fees like for a micro ISP or a small ISP? Are they quite expensive, or how are they?
We just did this for a client. The AS number was $500, and I believe the /21, I believe was like $1,400 maybe.
Yeah, no, like, in Ripe, it's kind of like you've got this $2,000 welcome to the club fee. So you have to drop that on the table to begin with and to become a Lear. And then once you have become a Lear, you can kind of get your AS, get your PA, /21. So, like, you'd be pretty much $1,300 a year kind of gets your AS and your first allocation. And then okay. I think it's something quite small, or used to be something quite small when you could get additional allocations back in the days of, you know, IPv4. You know, you could get it for £50 an allocation, which was very small administration. But it depends, as you grew, then, you know, your membership fees would go. But you'd have to be very big before, you know, so it was a reasonable price, I think, you know. Although I like yours. So $500 for an AS, $1,400 annually. Is there a setup cost, or what way do you earn play it?
No, that's pretty much your, might as well be lease fee. You know, yeah. you're leasing that for a year, so.
Oh, I get you. All right. Well, that's pretty cool.
And then, you know, of course, this is something I don't really agree with at the moment, since it's not really adopted. But to get IPv6 is yet another fee. You know,
yeah,
so
that's yeah, yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
No, like in Ripe, it's a bit more fair, if I may say so. Like, as in, you've basically like €1,300 a year for a small ISP like ours, and then you're talking about, and then you can get your IPv4 assignment. Once you justify it and all that, fill out the forms, it's pretty much part and parcel. In fact, they're actively encouraging you to go to IPv6. It's not like they're kind of going, oh, here, look at this new big long address scheme.
Mm-hmm.
I know here, Aaron, I think a couple of years ago they were offering free IPv6 blocks, no fees associated with anything like that.
Yeah, and then it was a sliding scale. You know, the next year was, you know, a reduced fee. The next year was, you know, a reduced fee plus some.
Yeah, they were kind of slowly ramping you up to normal price.
Now an IPv6 allocation is actually more than an IPv4 allocation.
No, that seems counterintuitive for technology that you're trying to move people onto.
Yep.
I think here in the States, you're not going to see IPv6 adoption for 10 years.
Serious?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's still so much IPv6. There's still a lot of IPv6 floating around here in the States, and then the ISPs own the majority of it. So they're going to keep doling that out, and they want to dole that out to keep you kind of hooked on them. You know, that way you're stuck with that existing ISP.
Would the U.S. government sell back some of its space to try and raise revenue that way?
No, they're not going to do anything sensible. I know.
Someone like Aaron is going to have to force them to give that back that space.
Well, was it 2 years ago, I think, or a year ago, that the government supposedly had to adhere to this IPv6 mandate or something like that? But
half them.
Yeah, they're not using it. It's ridiculous.
But even, like, if you look at IPv6 bad data, the problem is, like, we've ran about 3 courses on IPv6 so far, and we probably would run more if there was more, I suppose, demand. But what we found was, and what a lot of security professionals are finding, is that, you know, they're enabling IPv6 by default on all these newer devices, newer PCs, like anything after, you know, Vista. had it pretty much enabled by default. And then you can use things like, you could basically do a man-in-the-middle attack by just, you know, doing router advertisements. And that some, by, because IT administrators are focused on IPv4 and trained on IPv4, not so much on IPv6, what you're actually seeing is situations people, they're not monitoring the threats that IPv6 bring to a network, you know, like, and the controls associated with it. So what you can do is plug in, start doing router advertisements, and even though they have a valid DHCP lease on IPv4, that the actual network stack on the computer is programmed to say 2.6/4. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're now routing to the attacker's PC, even though from a network monitoring point of view, yes, they have an IPv4 lease, yes, they have, you know, they've come online. But if you're, you know, that, I suppose the way we'd look at it from a security point of view, and I'm sure I'd like to see what you think about it, but, you know, installing a particular system is okay as long as you're monitoring, you understand the system, and you're monitoring the threats associated with that and actively mitigating them. While I think with this kind of IPv6 by the backdoor approach by vendors and the lack of information awareness, I think that's a serious problem for security going forward. What do you think of yourselves? Or
yeah, I think you know since it is a, you know, most IT guys are, and I don't want to say most, but there's a good percentage of people out there that a NAT firewall is their security.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you start dumping in IPv6 and you have these public IPs on every device, if they're reachable from the internet, you know, that in itself is a, you know, a big issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, if all the chips fall into place and you have somebody that says, well, I'm testing IPv6 on my network, and all of a sudden it kind of, you know, it's like this, you know, Skynet, it just kind of takes over and propagates through the network, even if it's, you know, just sitting there, you know, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. I know for us here also in the States, probably something like 90% or better of businesses are happy with IPv4 1918 inside their network, and then NAT to a single public IP. They don't really care. So there is no reasonable push for them to even bother changing.
I mean, in our Zig network, we have 1,700 customers. Out of those 1,700 customers, maybe 150 have a true public IP address. And the only reason, you know, probably half those have a true public is their Xbox told them they needed one.
Yeah.
And so they're willing to pay extra for it.
Yeah, you know, they don't know what it really, you know, gets them, but they're told that they, you know, they need it.
Yeah. The majority of our residential customers, like in apartment complexes, have a 1918. They don't have publics either.
Yeah. Oh, like a lot of ours. I think the likes of UPnP being a cluster crap. You know what I'm trying to think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the control that, and the lack of thoughts associated with security is, I think with that is another issue that they've not ever, I suppose, addressed, you know, properly, you know.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think, you know, the dream of your refrigerator having an IP address and your toaster having an IP address, it's not there. You know, the technology is not there, so every device in your home doesn't need an IP address. You know, even if it did, you know, it being natted out, you know, and going to the cloud now, that seems to be kind of the push. Okay, you know, yeah, maybe my refrigerator can tell me I'm out of milk, but it's probably going to go to an app in the cloud to be able to do that.
Absolutely. And even one of the things that we were suggesting or requesting MikroTik, which is breaking, you know, standards like, you know, router advertisements, router solicitation and all that type of stuff, was actually kind of, you know, the concept of having IPv6 stack but no auto configuration whatsoever. So you'd actually have to manually configure, which kind of does break a point of, you know, of IPv6 in itself. But like, you know, So much so that what Microsoft have done is said, well, that'll break lots of functionality in IPv6, so it doesn't make sense to do it. So I'm still kind of discussing or suggesting that they still allow for this break all the standards just to kind of have this kind of IPv4-esque IPv6, so very static, you know, so you'd actually have to statically configure routes. Things like, you know, cool names like dead, cafe, beef, dot, def, or something like that. You see, you know, they're valid IPv6. So I was, that was one of the exercises in, you know, I was saying, try and make memorable, IPv6 addresses. So, you know, I was saying for a hotspot, it could be cafe.cafe.cafe.cafe. For a honeypot, you might have def.def.def.def. You know,
free porn.
F R. Where did they go with R? Like, that would be,
from a service provider side, you know, the only thing I care about is, you know, at one point those networks being able to reach IPv6 networks. I mean, that's that. If the network can do that, then, you know, there's no real need for IPv6 at this point.
Yeah, like, but the issue, of course, you'd have is how do you not, like, you know, the address space from a version 4 network, how would you, in IP terms, access an IPv6 pool from an IPv4 computer without some sort of proxy technology?
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing 6-4 or something, like, that's really all I care about in that regard.
Also, here in the States, virtually nobody is running any of their sites or anything like that on 6.
So yeah,
there's no real push for it anyway. From you know, I mean, to me, that seems like that would be kind of the driver. You know, corporations are going to start moving. So, hey, here's our new resources. Or there's IP exhaustion and you need 6 space. I just, right now, there's just not, I'm just not seeing demand from anybody anywhere.
Well, where I might see it, like, but do you not have, like in Europe, we have kind of strict kind of data retention laws, you know, for counterterrorism, that type of stuff. So, like, you know, matching an IP to a particular subscriber at a particular time. Do you have those type of regs in the States, or is it kind of a...
We don't.
No, it's just kind of, you know, they've tried to, you know, enact such laws, and they all, you know, they're always a part of some bigger package. You know, we have some things like CALIA, which is a open standard. It's not really an open standard, but there's a, you know, it's a method of sending law enforcement data, but there's not a, okay, you have to be able to show us 30 days of, you know, every customer on your network.
Yeah.
No, like we don't have such wiretapping rules. It's mainly that if a particular person was active at a particular time, committed some sort of cyber crime, that they'd say who was at that IP. That's what they kind of more or less require of us. But in that terms, what I would see possibly the trend from IPv6 or IPv4 to IPv6 is, one, Mikrotik, if we just talk about what Mikrotik could do, they need to have 6-4 working, which they don't currently, as far as I know. So, like, you need to have a 6-4 NAT type system going. You need also to, that would block, I think, ISPs being able to deliver, because obviously if you are delivering IPv6 to your customers and most of their gadgets support IPv6, then they won't even know that they're on IPv6. They'll just see it as, you know, as they are, you know. But I think obviously not having a 6-4 gateway is probably an impediment to that. I'd also see that maybe people with IPv4 space will probably start trying to monetize it, so try and kind of migrate their subscriber base from IPv4 to IPv6, and then sell the IPv4 space to rent it to hosting companies, where they absolutely, you know, if you want to host something, you want to get to everyone, you need to put it on an IPv4 network, really. The IPv6 lads will use 6-4 hosts to get there, but until, you know, and I'm even seeing, like, I've been talking to guys in Canada, hi Al, and he's considering the exact same situation. You know, they're actually looking at it like, as in, you know, I have 40,000 IPs here. How much is that per month?
Yeah, it's an asset.
Absolutely.
I know I have a friend of mine that works for HP, and he used to work for, was it, he worked for, you know, HP and Compaq merged, and then the Compaq name went away, and now they're just HP or whatever. I think Compaq had a slash 8, and HP had a slash 8, and they merged, and they got to keep them both. So they're sitting on this huge amount of addressing, and I think he said that the vast majority of it just goes unused.
Oh, I bet.
But they're not willing to give it up. I think they're the only company I know that uses discontinuous subnet masks in their access lists and stuff like that. And it's the hairiest, funkiest stuff, and I hate even thinking about it. It broke my brain when I first started trying to figure out how they did that stuff. It's just so illogical.
No, like, was it Caltech? Was that the one, or is that one of the guys who actually gave back their slash 8, or they had 2 slash 8s, I think, they gave back, did they? Or
that's upright of them.
One of the universities in the US did a very noble thing and said, you know what, we only need a slash whatever 21 here, have it back.
I mean, because what, at the very top of the range, it was designated as experimental. I don't know. I think there's a huge amount of aggressive.
2.4/0/4.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So it's a ton of addressing, because right now there's a lot of people that just want a slash 24 from Aaron. You know.
Yeah.
Service. Ton of those guys for, you know, several years to follow.
You have companies like Ford Motor Company. They have slash 8. And I know the people sitting somewhere are saying, hey, we're going to hold on to this because, you know, it's worth money.
Absolutely.
For sure.
I would have thought the experimental one would have been broken up and, but they're obviously just wanting everyone to move to IPv6.
Yeah.
Exercise buying control is part of the global conspiracy. Joking, by the way. it's certainly like what you're saying, the refrigerators, I think. And that was the whole idea of the auto configuration being, integral.
I mean, it sounds great in a George Jetson world, but, you know, we're not there yet.
No. Yeah. I want my flying car first.
Yep.
Flying car. Virtual reality, I think.
All right, so we are at 2 hours, and I could just continue to talk. So people aren't going to have this kind of stamina, dude. They're not going to be able to see it all the way through. So we got to cut this thing. We got to put it to bed. We got to stick a fork in it. So right here at the end, I definitely want to say thank you so much. For coming
on.
Yes,
thank you, Tom.
You are a blast. Anybody who sees you at the MUM definitely needs to come up and talk to this guy, because you are like one of the most friendly guys that I've ever met at one of these things. You're very close to normal for most of the people that show up at these, which is a very bitch of plus. And I'm extremely glad that Giannis actually introduced this man, because you're a really cool cat, and I like you a lot. You have a great head of hair, and I really love the beard. It's working for me.
I probably shaved. I was just experimenting, you know, just to prove I'd gone through puberty. You know, maybe the next time I'll be naked for the absolutely. But not now. I would like to say that it's been a pleasure, and hope to be on again. And it was really nice meeting yourselves, and thank my friend Giannis as well, because, you know, introducing us. I think and I've often used many of your exercises on your Greg Soul, you know, MikroTikUniversity.com. So, you know, it's quite useful that you, and it's quite I've actually been looking at some of the videos online of the Brothers Whisper, and I'm saying, this sounds like a pretty cool idea. So I'd be delighted to be back again. It's an honor for me anyway. Thanks very much, guys.
Yeah. So usually right here at the end we say, what are you doing next week? Like, what's your plans for next week, Tom?
Plans for next week? I have to keep fixing this ISP. I was meant to be hardening a few servers for some of them, but they're slightly behind schedule, so that's pretty much it. The week after, I'm heading to Dallas.
Are you going to do the whole, are you going to get a cowboy hat and do the whole thing?
No, you'll probably see me in a bar kind of singing Irish songs and being thrown out or something like that.
That seems likely, actually.
Yeah, but, you know, so you're 3.5 hours, you've no excuse. What about you, Justin? How many hours are you away from Dallas?
It'd be about a 4-hour plane flight, I think.
Sure, it's only around the corner.
So yeah, only around the corner.
All right, Justin, what are you doing next week, brother?
I hope my cloud cores come in. If my cloud cores come in, I got a new fiber shelf and some things to do in the data center, but it just depends on if the cloud cores come in.
Gotcha. Let's see, next week I'm is it next week? They're starting to prostitute me out a lot more up at work, so I'm doing a lot more sales engineering. I'm going to be doing some lunch and learns soon. So I'll be telling people about data center migration strategies and best practices.
Oh,
it's going to be
okay.
Fascinating. It's basically an excuse for a free lunch. So I'm in it for that.
Cool.
I'll be doing that. So I guess, golly, this is the longest one ever, and I'm going to go to sleep now. As I say that, it's 5 in the morning for you now, 4. So again, thank you very much, Justin. Stay strong, brother. Hopefully we can get some more of the guys on here next week, and definitely going to have you back, Tom. Definitely going to have you back, dude.
Respect. Have a good one, lads. It was great talking to you.
All right, late.